The lesson this evening comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 19, verses 1 through 10, and chapter 20, verses 21 through 26. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, "He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." But the Pharisees asked him, "Teacher, is it lawful for us to give tribute to Caesar or not?" So Jesus said to them, "Show me a denarius. Whose likeness and inscription does it have?" They said, "Caesar's." He said to them, "Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And marveling at his answer, they became silent.
I can't believe I told him I would talk today, of all time. "Don't you know that tax time is coming up? Oh, I'm so busy, I can't even think straight, and I'm supposed to talk to you tonight. Do you see this mess up here? Look at this. I thought the Romans were bad. 1040. 105 pages of instruction. Or maybe you can use the 1040A. That's only got 92 pages of instruction. Or maybe the 1040 EZ. That's the easy form. It's only got 48 pages of instructions. And then you've got the state, Pennsylvania, PA 40. Another 44 pages of instruction. Plus, you've got Schedule A, you've got Schedule B, you've got Schedule D. What happened to Schedule C? You've got E, you've got O. There's a J, but they were out of them. There's a W2S, and there's a Schedule UE. I don't believe this. Oh, can you imagine what it's like to be a tax collector at a time like this? This is my manual. That's only 152 pages. And they got the picture right on the cover. No monkeying around when you give your money to Uncle Sam. Oh, I tell you what, look at these. By the time tax time is over, these will all be down about that short. And the erasers, wow. I got a whole box of erasers because they don't last long at all. But this is my prized possession. It's my first $1 million bill that I made as a tax collector. I am so proud of that. When I told Jesus that I'd give away half of everything, and the rest of my money, if I had defrauded anyone, I'd give four times over. I took that out before I counted how much money I had. This isn't money. This is a treasure. I'll keep that as long as I live. And this beast, I was just getting used to use, I think you call them a fax machine. I was just getting used to using it. Now they tell me they don't want faxes. They shut down their fax number. I'm supposed to send emails. I'm supposed to e-file. Where's that schedule E? Oh, I forget, computers. I'll tell you what, if I had that, had this little baby when I was working for Rome, would have made my job a lot easier. Don't worry, your pastor told me to make sure it was silenced for this evening's message. Even a calculator. We didn't have tools like this when I was a tax collector. How much easier it would have been. But even with all this stuff, what a headache. Oh, I can't believe it. You have to excuse me. I'm settling down. I shouldn't get so upset because nobody wants to meet at 8 o'clock at night anyway, so I'm usually not busy at this time. But still, it's no fun being a tax collector, let me tell you. And it's especially... I told you I'm not used to these things. Let's see if it'll work this time. I got to talk to your pastor. I saw a guy speak the other day, and he had something hooked over his ear that went down like this. He didn't have to worry about pinning it to his clothes. These robes, you can't pin anything to them. I know he's got buttons that go down the front. You know how long it was after I died before they invented buttons that went down the front of your clothes? There. That should be better. Oh, my goodness. I have to take a breath. Yeah, yes, I'm a tax collector. And I was telling you, it's no fun. How many of you like to go to the tax collector to do your taxes? You know what I mean. Now they've got whole businesses. My boss, your pastor tells me he used to work for one of them, H&R Block. And he says the only time people liked him was when he gave them money back. When they got a rebate. Gave them money back? He's a tax collector and he's giving money back? What kind of tax collector is he? People did not like me. Because Rome required taxes, and I saw that the taxes were paid. I was not just a tax collector. I was the chief tax collector for the Jericho district. And you may say, as many people in my own day said, why would you, a Jew, want to collect taxes for a foreign power that had invaded your land? An honest question. The answer is simple. I was good at it. I've always been good with figures, with numbers. Even though we had a very different way of working with numbers, and let me tell you, it's no fun working with I's and V's and L's and X's and C's and M's and all that garbage. That's another thing that would have made my job so much easier if you guys would have listened to the Arabs and picked up those numerals a lot quicker than you did. But no, I had to work with the Roman system. You go through a lot of pencils when you have to put a string of L's and I's and V's along the line to add up a total. Well, I was good at it. I had a mathematical mind. They wouldn't have called it that back then. They'd have said I was crazy. Because anyone who was good with numbers the way I was, they thought there was something a little screwy about his brain. Because most people just didn't bother with that stuff. But I was good with numbers, and what do you do if you're a Jew living under an enemy, the Roman Empire, and you're good at numbers? What, you go out to the sheep and you teach the sheep arithmetic or something? It's a useless gift. But when the Romans came into power and they established that whole system of collecting taxes, I knew here was something I could be good at. And when I was growing up, I was one of six kids, and my brothers and sisters hated me anyway. So I thought, it doesn't matter if the people don't like me. If I'm using my gifts, God will be pleased. Now, you may think, like they did, that anyone who is a tax collector is automatically a cheat and a scoundrel. And no doubt you said that yourself about people that collect your taxes. If the collectors aren't cheats and scoundrels, the people who take the money and squander it away are cheats and scoundrels, and I agree with you on that one. Why, if the Roman Empire had not put so much money into defense and spent so much money arming their soldiers and sending them to who knows where, they'd have had more money for the widows and the orphans. But what are you going to say to Rome? I got a job as a tax collector. I did my job well. I was as fair as I could be, even though people hated you just as much if you were fair as if you weren't fair. I worked my way up because the Roman authorities realized that if you have an honest tax collector and he runs his whole district in an honest way, then that's the best chance you have of having good relations with the local people, because nobody's going to want to give money to the Caesar anyway. Nobody wants to pay their taxes. But they will know, even though they complain, they will know that the person taking their taxes is being fair. And they'll direct their anger toward the Romans rather than towards their own. And some people did. Not many, but some people did. I was honest. I was a good manager. And before I knew it, I was chief tax collector. I wanted more than anything to live a meaningful life, to use my gifts in service to God. But the Pharisees said to me, how can you be using your gifts in service to God when all you're doing is sending money to the Roman oppressors? To me, the Romans were not the enemy. The Romans just were. What are you going to do? Go against the most mighty army the world has ever seen? I had friends that were killed trying to do that. Not me. Life's too short for that sort of thing. I know how to pick my battles, and I wasn't going to pick on Rome. So I learned to get along. Rome was the power, and I would see at least that they were as fair as they could be. But as I went on in my position as chief tax collector, I had this growing sense that something greater was about to happen. I don't know if you've ever felt that way. If you've ever had the feeling that life is just unsettled and you can't put your finger on it, you don't know what it is. But there's just something. Something's going to happen. You don't know what it is. You don't know if it's good or bad. You just know everybody seemed to feel it. Everybody was on edge. It was about that time that John the Baptist appeared in the wilderness. And he started telling people, you've got to pay more attention to God. You've got to get your house in order. You've got to learn from God what really matters and quit wasting your life on the things that don't matter. I like John the Baptist. I like John because he was direct. He told you what he had to say. He didn't beat around the bush. I like that. Maybe it's my mathematical mind. I don't know. But I appreciated that about John. And as I heard what people were saying about John, you know, he wasn't too far away from where I was. Jericho's not that far from the Jordan River. If you remember your Bible history and Joshua crossing the Jordan, and the first place he does battle is Jericho. John wasn't that far away from me. So I went to see him. Boy, was there a crowd. Filled the whole hillside. But he had a voice. He could make it carry. I was there. You know I was there. Because the same person who wrote about me being up in the sycamore tree and who wrote those words that she read. When was it that you guys started letting women read from Scripture? Oh, that's Jesus. Oh, that's right. He treated women with respect too. The same fellow that wrote about that encounter Jesus had with the Pharisees and is it right to pay taxes to Caesar? He wrote about me. Earlier in the book, you remember? In the third chapter, I think it is, where he talked about John the Baptist. And he said, soldiers came to him and said, John, what should we do as soldiers? And you know, I really thought John would say, well, get out of the army. But he didn't. He said, do your job well. Don't intimidate people. And get this, be content with your wages. Ooh, boy, that one hurts. Well, I heard them ask their question, and I thought, well, maybe I should ask him my question. I was half afraid. I wanted to ask him, I'm a tax collector. How can I serve the Almighty God as a tax collector? But I was afraid he would say, give up your job. You're helping the enemy. But he didn't. Do you know what he said? He said, don't take any more than you're supposed to. What I was already doing. Be fair. Treat people with respect. I thought, wow. That's great. Maybe God is pleased with me after all. So all I ever wanted was for God to be pleased with me. Maybe there's a chance. So I asked John to baptize me. And after he baptized me, I was feeling pretty good for a while, but there was still this gnawing uneasiness in me, like there's something more, there's something I'm missing. And then I heard, there's this guy up in Galilee, his name is Jesus. He's doing all kinds of miracles. He's giving sight to the blind. He's making the lame walk. Why, he even raised the dead. Can you believe that? He raised the dead. And then I remembered what John had said. He said, don't get too attached to me. I'm just a servant. My job is to point to the one who's coming, who is so much greater than I am, I'm not worthy to tie his shoes. Wow. Why, I thought John was the next door neighbor to God himself. And here he is telling me, another one is coming. And as time went on, for a year, 2 years, I was hearing more and more about Jesus. People who heard him, people who saw him, who saw the miracles he was doing. Well, what were the chances I would ever see him? Because he's in Galilee and I got a job. I can't take a week or 2 weeks off to go up to Galilee and try to find him and hear what he has to say. And I thought, well, he's a good Jew. He'll go to Jerusalem for the festivals. But so many times he went around the other side of the Jordan. And I got a job. I don't get vacation days. This is a Roman Empire we're talking about. But then I heard he was making his way through Samaria. You go through Samaria, you come to Jericho before you get to Jerusalem. I thought, maybe, just maybe he'll come my way. And then I heard, Jesus is coming to town. He enters the town of Jericho. Right off the bat, there's two blind men on the road. I know them. I do their taxes. Jesus gave them their sight. He goes through the town of Jericho. He's heading to Jerusalem. I know the road he's going to take. There's only one way. And the road is lined with sycamore trees. You know what a sycamore tree? You call them buttonwood trees. Some people think they're shrubs. They only grow about this, you know, like a big holly or something. No, no. A sycamore tree, a sycamore fig tree can grow to 60, 70 feet in height. But the thing about a sycamore tree, it's got a big trunk that branches off close to the ground. As a kid, I used to love climbing them. Because as a short kid, they were about the only tree I could climb. We didn't have ladders in our day. I could climb a sycamore tree. Now, I got to tell you, it was no fun. Because a sycamore tree, the trunk of a sycamore tree is hollow. You know what that means? That means every insect in creation is going to find a way of getting into that trunk and making a home there. Do you know what it's like to sit on the limb of a tree waiting for something to happen and then the bugs find out you're there? And they start crawling up your sandals and up under your robe, and pretty soon you're like this. They're all over you. Then in addition to the bugs, as if that weren't enough, they have blossoms on them in the spring. And the blossoms are they're sticky, and they have a sickly sweet smell to them. It's no fun sitting in a sycamore tree, but I did it. I had to do it. Because nobody likes me. And everybody likes Jesus. What do you think the chances are? A short guy like me that nobody likes is going to get close enough to see Jesus when he's walking through town? Not going to happen. So I went to that sycamore tree, one of the ones that lined the road from Jericho up to, you know the song about going from Jericho up to Jerusalem? You go up because Jerusalem's on the mountain and Jericho's in the plain. So I knew he was coming my way. I climbed up in that sycamore tree. Yeah, there I am. That's me. Now, take a look at that picture. You see all those dark green leaves on the tree? Yeah, sycamore trees covered with dark green leaves. You think anybody could see me up in that tree? No way. No way. Your pastor tells me that when he put that picture on the cover of the bulletin, someone said to him, "Don't put that picture." Well, I can't hardly make out Zacchaeus. He said, that's the point. He's hiding in the tree. I was hiding. I did not expect Jesus to see me. I wanted to see him. Why? I don't know. I tell you what. Your pastor was telling me about this earlier today. He said he was coming up the road from down, hundreds of miles away, a place called Shamokin Dam. He's coming through. And he sees all these cars lying in the street, in the parking lots of the businesses and all kinds of businesses. I thought, businesses? Taxes? Oh, that's a difference. Lining all these parking lots, these cars, and the people are just sitting in them. They're sitting out on the car, on the hood. And he's like, what's going on? And all of a sudden it happened. A caravan, I would call it a caravan, because I live near the desert. A caravan of those huge moving houses that he called them semis, with pictures painted on the side of race cars and numbers. Yeah, they were having a NASCAR race way up there somewhere. And everybody was lined up so that when the semis went through, they could honk their horns at. And people think I was stupid for sitting in a sycamore fig tree so I could see Jesus. Well, I saw Jesus. There he was coming, and I was very content knowing no one's going to see me up here. And who would expect the tax collector of all people to want to see Jesus? I was safe. All I wanted to do was see him. And there he came. And he walked right on, I knew he'd walk right under my tree. He has to, because it lines the road. The branches are spread out over the road, and I'm clinging to the branch, trying desperately not to scratch and not to sneeze. And he gets right under me, and he looks up. And he says, Zacchaeus, come down here right away. I'm going to your house today. I didn't know what surprised me more. That he invited himself to the house of a tax collector? No. You know what really surprised me? Zacchaeus. Nobody calls me by my name. It's, hey you, or tax collector. Zacchaeus? Well, there are times when I think the only person in the world who ever called me Zacchaeus was my mother. And half the time when she said it, she was mad at me. Zacchaeus, come down here. I'm eating at your house. Boy, were the people upset. They were so mad. I could hear it. I could feel it. It was like all of a sudden the desert sun was out, and I felt the heat of their anger rising up to me in the tree as I was making my way down. And so to try to honor Jesus for wanting to talk to me, to get him off the hook, I said, right now, I declare I'm going to take half of my wealth and give it to the poor. And with what's left, anyone who thinks I've cheated him can come to me and we'll settle the bill. And if I've cheated him, I'll pay him four times over. I stuck out my chest. I was proud. This is what I'm going to do. And I knew I could do it. I knew that even if I gave away half of my money, I would still have enough to pay four times over everyone I've cheated, because I don't cheat people. But you have to have some money, because there's always someone who thinks you did. And if someone came up to me and says, you cheated me, and tells me how much I owe him, I would pay him. I wouldn't bother looking in the book. If that's what it takes to ease your conscience, I'll use my money to ease your conscience. Jesus used his life to pay my debt. See, that's what it's about. What's a tax collector do? A tax collector collects what you owe the government. And even Jesus said you should pay your taxes. Pay what you owe, he says. If you owe the government, pay the government. But you owe God, be sure to pay him. I like that about Jesus. He's straightforward. No beating around the bush. He paid the debt. That's what it's all about. He paid my debt. Then he said something. The crowd was still murmuring. And when I stuck out my chest and said, here's what I'm going to do, and I promised to give away half my money, Jesus pointed to me and he said, see, salvation has come to this man's house today because he too is a son of Abraham. There were people in that crowd who would have never owned up to the truth that I was a Jew. I was a traitor. But to Jesus, I was a son of Abraham. You know how that makes a person feel? I'm a son of Abraham. Well, you should feel that way because, hey, you're a son of the king. You're a daughter of the king. And then he said something I will never forget. He said, for the Son of Man has come to what? To seek and to save the lost. All this time I was priding myself for seeking out Jesus, for looking for a place where I could see Jesus, never knowing that Jesus was seeking me. That God was preparing my heart for that encounter. Way back when I chose to be a tax collector, he was laying out a path for me. I didn't know it was him, but I was following a path he had laid out for me. All the promotions that I had, he engineered them. I thought it was my own skill. He's the one who took me out to the Jordan when John was preaching. Just when that soldier asked the question, I'm a soldier, what should I do? That gave me the courage to say, I'm a tax collector, what do I do? And then John, by his preaching and by his answer to me, was stirring up that fire that God was stoking in my heart. God was engineering that meeting that day. It was no accident that Jesus chose to go through Jericho on his way to Jerusalem. He told me when he came to my house at dinner, he said, Zacchaeus, I came this way just so I could meet you. And if you think that's something, you stick around because in about 2 weeks, something else is going to happen that I'm doing just for you. And then 3 days later, the Father's going to do something that's just for you. Well, when I heard 2 weeks later that Jesus had been crucified, I have to tell you, I felt empty in the pit of my stomach. But I had to admit, I understand. They'd have done that to me if I'd have let them, maybe. That's what hatred does. That's what resentment does. That's what an idol does. It requires sacrifices. And you kill other people. You may not kill them openly, outwardly, but in your heart you kill them. You kill any chance of a relationship with them. That's what having an idol will do. And these people who treated me this way, they treated Jesus the same way. But then I realized I have that in my heart too. That weekend when I heard that Jesus had died was the longest weekend of my life and the saddest. But when I heard early the next week that there was a rumor that Jesus had been raised from the dead, I knew it was true. Nobody had to tell me. I didn't have to see Jesus, and it's a good thing because I never did. But I knew it was true. Because Jesus said in about 2 weeks, I'm going to do something that's just for you. And when he died on the cross, he paid a debt in my name. And when he said 3 days later, he said 3 days later, something else is going to happen that God is going to do just for you. And that was his resurrection. Because when God raised him from the dead, God was saying to me, Zacchaeus, if you put your life in his hands, I'll do the same for you. And I believe it. I believe he will. And I'm just waiting for that day to come. Well, that's my story. And you've been very patient. Most people would not have put up with me this long. And I have always believed that patience should be rewarded. Now, when I told the crowd that I'd give away half my money, and with the half that was left, not counting my prized possession, I would pay back 4 times over anyone I had cheated. By the time I had settled accounts with people who thought I had cheated them, I still had a little bit of money to go around. So I want to share it with you. I just love sharing my wealth. After all, what else are you going to do with it? If you don't share it, you hoard it. And if you hoard it, what's going to happen when you die? It's all going to go to somebody else, probably some member of your family that you don't even like. They're going to get all your money, and you're not going to have any because you can't take it with you. So I say, make friends with your money. And then, when you enter into heaven, your friends will be waiting for you, and they'll say, there's the guy who was so generous sharing his wealth. There's the guy who knew how to be a friend. You make a lot of friends with money. And you know what? What better thing is there to do with money than make friends? Because anything else you do with it, it's all either going to end up in your stomach or it's going to end up at the junk pile. So you might as well use your money for something worth. I think Jesus said that one time. I think he said, make friends with your wealth. And then when you enter into your heavenly habitation, your friends will be there waiting for you. You are now my friends. Because I've shared my wealth with you. And I look forward to sharing eternity with you as well. Thank you for your patience. I really do appreciate it.